But at the end of the day, do you want people thinking about their own life differently or about you? And if they leave the conversation thinking about you, you failed. If they leave the conversation thinking differently about their own world and their own life, or their own needs, differently than when they started the conversation, you added value. And that's the likeliest place to get the conversation to continue.
Welcome to Outside Sales Talk, where we meet with industry experts to learn the strategies and tactics that make them successful. I'm your host, Steve Benson, and I've helped thousands of salespeople all over the world crush their quota. Today, I'll help you crush yours. Welcome back to Outside Sales Talk. Today, I've got Ron Carucci with me, and we're going to be talking about building influential connections in sales. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Hey, Steve, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so Ron is the co-founder and managing partner of Navalent. He has a 30-year track record helping some of the world's most influential executives tackle challenges of strategy, organization, and leadership. Ron, let's jump into the questions. What would you say, what leads certain salespeople to connect better with their prospects than other salespeople?
You know, Steve, we've all been on the other side of lots of salespeople, right? Whether it's on a phone or in an email or in person. And we all can instantly spot the difference between the person that makes me feel comfortable, makes me feel at ease, makes me feel curious, makes me eager to learn what they have to say, and the person that makes me want to go take a shower. I can't get away from them fast enough. I feel like I'm being manipulated. You know, they're like all plastic, all sizzle, no steak. And those are not small differences, and they're not hard to detect, right? I think salespeople that show up with a sense of help first, sell later, are the ones that are going to connect better, because it's more about you. The people who have an agenda to sell, who want to convert you, who are looking for their in, who are asking you questions only to find the data they want, you know who they are. And you're and what those people don't realize is that the person in front of you is shutting down. They're not opening up. And it, you know, it depends on what you're selling, but most of us are selling, you know, services or asking for commitments. I mean, in my business, I'm asking for 6 and 7 figure commitments from leaders. You know, so my sales cycle can be 6-7 months. Soon into that relationship, these people who I'm asking to trust me with the keys to their kingdom don't trust me. Don't believe that I'm out for their good. Don't believe that I understand their world and the pain they're in. It's over. And you know, the challenge in my world is that when I began my career, there were not that many people doing the kind of work that I do. Now there are hundreds of thousands of people claiming to do what I do. I'm being compared to all kinds of yahoos. It doesn't matter if it's rational or fair, that's the world I'm in. And so I have to set myself apart that much quicker and that much more intentionally if I'm going to have leaders want to keep talking to me.
And how do you do that?
For me, it's about help first, right? So when I begin a conversation with an executive who's in some kind of pain point, my assumption is if I never talk to you again, I want you to say that I was helpful. I want you to say that I made you think. I want you to say that I gave you a perspective or a tool or something to go help you move your dilemma along if you never call me again. I don't want you to, you know, if my goal is only to move the conversation along through the funnel or to get you that much closer to considering a sample of my work or considering me a partner, that's about me. And these are savvy buyers. They know the difference. So for me, it's, I presume a level of intimacy. I presume a level of trust. I presume a level of vulnerability on their part and my part. If they've called to ask a question, whether they're willing to admit they're in pain or not, or willing to admit what part of the pain they contributed to, at least they're asking a question. Many times they're asking the wrong question, and I have to help guide them to that moment. And I have to recognize that this may not all happen in one conversation. Now, if you're selling widgets, so you're selling something a little bit more transactional, or you need to get you have a close rate you have to hit, which is always unfortunate, then you have to move things along a little bit more efficiently. But at the end of the day, do you want people thinking about their own life differently or about you? And if they leave the conversation thinking about you, you failed. If they leave the conversation thinking differently about their own world and their own life or their own needs differently than when they started the conversation, you added value. And that's the likeliest place to get the conversation to continue.
Okay. So show prospects value and be authentic. Tell me, what is attachment? I've read some stuff you've talked about there. Yeah. What is attachment, and how can salespeople utilize attachment when forming relationships?
Well, so it's funny. It's many leaders take a utilitarian look at it, right? I'm going to use attachment, which means I'm going to fake it and make it look like I'm connected to you so you like me. Attachment is a psychological phenomenon in all of our lives. We all have styles of attachment. We all have ways we connect to others, ways we establish intimacy, the way we build trust, the ways we build relationships with other people. And if you don't understand that selling is fundamentally a relationship versus a transaction, and every sales book in the world says that, but it's still astounding to me these days, Steve, how many salespeople don't understand what it means and how to do it. And so they're Teflon. They're glitzy, they're polished, they're almost, you know, robotic in their, you know, in their own anxiety, their own, I mean, I've never met a good salesperson that didn't struggle with imposter syndrome, right? Some sense of inadequacy. They leave their humanity at the door rather than featuring it in a conversation. So you have a style of attachment. The question is, do you know what it is? Do you know how to optimize the attachment? Can you recognize how the person on the other side of a table attaches or doesn't? And can you adapt accordingly? You are establishing a relationship. You are sending cues about trustworthiness. You are breaking down or reinforcing defenses. You are telling people things about yourself non-verbally. The questions you ask, the order you ask them in, the way you answer their questions, the way you listen deeply, how you show empathy, how you show enjoyment, and how you let yourself be enjoyed. These are all cues that people are using, even subconsciously, right? We have tons of behavioral science information that talks about cognitive biases that are operative. People are drawing conclusions about whether or not to give you money or whether or not you're trustworthy of taking their money from the minute they meet you. And if you don't understand all those cues and aren't paying attention to the feedback loops that you're getting in their eyes, in their voice, in their body language, in their questions, and adapting accordingly, and you're just sticking to your script, you're probably not going to succeed very long as a salesperson in this world today.
Yeah, well, and that almost feeds back into your original point around authenticity. And you know, if you're not authentic and you're not actually showing value to your customers, then they're going to pick up on that and not attach to you, not like you as much, not feel the same connection.
And the interesting thing about, you know, authenticity is it's a kicked around word a lot, right? But authenticity is in the eye of the beholder, right? I may be very authentic. I just may be authentically very self-serving. Authentically very self-interested, or right. I may be authentically very shallow. That's authenticity. It's just not going to help you connect with people,
right?
And so, you know, if you're somebody who, for whom your self-knowledge is pretty limited, your awareness of how those experience you is pretty limited. You're not quite certain if you come across the way you, if your intentions and your impact have a really large gap in them. If you're anxious, I mean, many salespeople, it's so funny. I'm not sure if you've seen this, Steve, but so many salespeople I've met hate selling. They don't enjoy the process of, you know, having to influence and convince others that what they've got is worth it. They feel dirty. They feel prostitutional. They feel manipulative. They don't like it. Or they're so driven by the commission structure or the pay structure that they're blinded by their own ambitions. But if you don't enjoy that what you're bringing to the market, to customers or clients, is helpful to them in some way, and you don't enjoy the fact that genuinely you believe that what you're offering is good for other people, in some way, in some form, then you're likely just going to be a schlocky salesperson that probably doesn't do very well.
Well, and that's That's the authenticity side of what you were saying. The show prospects value side. Can you explain the help first, sell later mindset? And why is the help first, sell later mindset so important for field salespeople?
At the end of the day, the value that you create in your product or service is in the eye of the beholder. It's so astounding to me how many times if you ask a salesperson, what's the value proposition, the classic question, what are you selling? And then you ask buyers, what are you buying? How much they don't match, right? You may think you're selling convenience, I'm buying price. You may think you're selling price, I'm buying technology. So it's not about what you think the features and benefits are of your offering. It's what does the person on the other side of the table think they are? Well, you're never gonna know that till they tell you. And that requires you listening first. You know, my opening question is to every prospect, tell me how I can help. What's going on? And I'm gonna hear about their pain. I'm gonna hear about their frustration. I'm gonna hear about, a challenge they're facing. I'm mostly going to hear how they're defining the help they think they want, which almost inevitably is at best incomplete and almost always the wrong question. That isn't mine to judge at this moment. Mine is just to understand, how are you seeing the pain you're in? What else have you tried? Why do you think help is a good thing now? Because the interesting thing about timing is, why'd you call now? Now, if you had it was a cold call and you got the call, then why'd they say yes? You know, and sometimes one of the best questions you can ask is, I know you probably get gazillions of calls from people wanting to sell something to you, but you chose to take my call. And so I'm so curious as to why. And let them tell you what it was about your voice, your product, your offering, your company, your brand. What was it about that made them want to know more? Because they'll give you the answer, and that's an asset. And it's also great feedback, right? To know you may have done something right you didn't even know you did. So get them talking and let them talk for as long as they're willing to talk. Take good notes, listen deeply, ask further questions. Don't just be listening for the, that's my in, or, that's the product I can sell them, or, they need XYZ, they need the premium package, not the gold package. Don't be listening for how to force fit your solution to a question they may not be asking, right? Listen for the question they're asking. Listen for the questions they should be asking, but don't just be listening for the questions or the needs you want to hear that fit your pitch deck. And care and show empathy. Demonstrate that you've seen the pain they're in before. Demonstrate that you've helped other people solve it at some point. And then when it comes time, when the conversation is ready to switch, for you to say, would it be okay if I share with you some thoughts on how I think I might be able to help? Ask permission. And then it's time to sort of, you know, begin to say, okay, I'm here to sell. At that point in the conversation, people know what you're there for. It's not a secret. Mm-hmm. And so don't try and convince and persuade. Don't judge. All the manipulative tricks around, you know, how would you feel if I told you could have this, this, and this? Well, it's 2020. We're well past that crap. People are still doing it, but we're well past it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, talk about what, demonstrate that you heard, you know, everything in the first 10, 20, or 30 minutes of the conversation. Demonstrate you listened. Demonstrate that you understood. Demonstrate that you've seen the problem before. And then begin to introduce the notion of how whatever you're selling might be helpful to them. Use a demo to give them a sample. Use, again, at the price points we work at, I do tons of work for free. What I tell my prospects is, look, at some point you and I will decide to start the meter or not. But while I'm here, let me help.
Mm-hmm.
And I may go back for several conversations. We have one client now, you know, well over seven-figure client for many, many years. The woman who owns that relationship worked for free for 4 years. Not daily, but she'd go and do meetings, she'd go do pitches, she'd talk to different executives. For 4 years, she cultivated that relationship. And then when the time was right, we even turned down some work in that 4 years because it was like, this is the wrong work for us. We get pitch and hold there, we'll never be able to do what we're good at. And when the time was right, the meter started running. And, you know, every product and service may not fit that kind of a model. You can't be that patient if your living is dependent on a quota or a commission. But the point is, if they know you care, you are your product, you are your service. Even if you're passing it off to an implementer or somebody else, if you're just the cultivator or the, you know, the rainmaker, and then it's a, you know, it's some kind of a bait and switch where you're going to pass it off to somebody else, you are the face of the offering. And the trust that you build with them will be the trust they have in the product or service. And so however long that takes to build, it takes to build.
So tell me, why is it important for field salespeople to open themselves up in order to build these great relationships with prospects?
You used the word before, authenticity. I think that our humanity is our greatest asset, that we are imperfect humans, that we have foibles, that we have kids at home sick, that we have cars that break down, that we have our own anxieties and challenges, that we're humans, right? And I'm asking the person in front of me to trust me with a pain point, something that's not working, something that's, maybe they never admitted to anybody that is a struggle in their organization, or their department, or their team, or their family. How can I ask that of them if I'm not willing to let them understand that, there's parts of my life that suck too. Now, you don't want to one-up them. You don't want to compete with them. You don't want to, you know, breach boundaries and share things that we don't want to hear about. But if I can show empathy, true empathy, by letting you know, gosh, I was there. I understand. If I'm selling a weight loss drug and I've never struggled with weight, or I'm overweight, I have a credibility gap, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm selling you, you know, a gym membership and I was 80 pounds overweight, now I'm not, how I use that story, not manipulatively and not coercively, but genuinely, is going to help my credibility and help that person believe that I believe in what it is I'm asking them to consider.
Do you have an example of how salespeople can open up to a prospect that would more universally work? I mean, I totally get like the gym membership example, but let's just say it's more of a traditional business situation.
Sure. Well, but even in a business situation, right? Somebody's job's at risk. Somebody's performance is at risk. There's been a catastrophe. You know, there's been a problem. Somewhere the person is up against the rails, or they're facing a risk. Mm-hmm. They're not going to tell you, well, I'm worried about losing my job, or my boss is going to be all over me if this fails, or I need help because. But you can read between the lines, and you can tell a story of, last year I was blah blah blah, and I was really anxious about, I can imagine how much stress that must be for you. You can make connection points to the pain you're hearing about through experiences you've had where you've felt disproportionate levels of risk in a choice, where choosing a partner or provider felt like a make or break success factor. You can say, look, you're talking to more people than me. I get that. One of the things that I do a lot in my business, I've been in the consulting business for 35 years. I know what great consulting looks like. I know what crappy looks like. I have written on more times than not, look, I'm not the cheapest thing on the planet. So maybe my price points don't fit your budget. But as you consider partners to help you solve this problem, please consider these factors. Judge us against, and I say, here's the criteria you should be looking for. Any partner you interview, be looking for these factors. I'm not perfect at all of them, but if somebody doesn't come with these things, please don't hire them, because I can tell you confidently they won't help you solve your problem. My prospects love that. I'm going to walk away mm-hmm. to help make them successful. And so how you use your own experience base, they're making a decision, right? Now, if you can switch from them making a decision about you to making a decision about how to best solve a problem or meet a need in their company, now you're on the same side of a table with them. Mm-hmm. Right, versus a cross table. The minute they feel that, you now have a competitive advantage, because now they feel like, oh, this is an ally.
Yeah, it builds a ton of trust, and frankly, and it gets back to what you're talking earlier about showing the prospect's value. A form of value can be helping them consider your competitors. I think it's actually important to help your customers think through how they want to purchase your product, and help them understand your competitors, help them really get what's best for them. Yep. Because those are going to be the most profitable customers anyway. And
absolutely.
I've always believed that if there's a better solution for someone, if someone is asking me for something, I don't try to fit a square peg in a round hole. I think it's a bad idea. I think it's better to say, hey, you know what I think you're really looking for is this type of system. I know the space pretty well. Here are the three players. Here are some of the advantages and disadvantages. And, you know, sure, you're not going to get the business, but maybe you will a year later when the priority is the stuff that you actually focus on.
And then come back and say, would you like me to make the introduction for you? Like a really closed loop for them, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's all of that equity you build up in a network of people who trust you to be a go-to solution provider, even if this isn't the moment. Mm-hmm. One of the questions that is such a profoundly important question to ascertain in the transaction is, what is at risk for the buyer? What goes right for you if this goes well? What goes wrong for you if it doesn't go well? Now, really, the power in that question is when you ask it. You ask it too soon in the relationship, you look manipulative and like a car salesman. You ask it at the appropriate time when you've earned your right to ask it. You then get to say, here's how I think I can help it go well for you.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, here's your part. One of the things that salespeople are so reticent to do is when there's across the table for them is clearly the person who's the buyer is a big part of the problem. And no one's talking about that. If you're not willing to have the courage to call the question on the moose to say, gosh, you know, I don't know if you talk to other people in your company the way you're talking to me, but there, you know, you could put in a whole new management system here, but my guess is that people are still going to be afraid of you. Have you had that feedback before? You know, if you're not willing to sort of be a peer to them, if you show so much deference to them that they're going to, that their own behavior is part of the challenge that no one's told them before, mm-hmm. have the kindness to tell them the truth. They may fire you, but at least hold up a mirror that no one else has held up to them. I have to do that all the time in my work, because often executives, you know, CEOs, you know, business unit presidents, chief sales officers, chief marketing officers call me, and you know, they will have located the problem outside themselves, and that may be partially true, or it's the culture, or it's the structure, or it's the process. And I'm like, and I'm looking around going, I think part of it could be you. And you know, let's talk about that. What, you know, one of the questions I love to ask my prospects is, if I go and ask everybody in the organization what it was like to work for you, who reports to you, what would they tell me? What would I hear? And if I hear the words, well, I would hope you would hear, like, yeah, didn't ask what you'd hope for, what would I actually hear? It forces them. And I said, you know what? Don't make something up. If you don't know what I would hear for sure, that's disconcerting, because you need to know. Because you are being talked about at dinner tables every night in the homes of people. If you don't know what stories they're telling about you, that's a problem, because that's a narrative you should be influencing. So, you know, those are the kinds of ways you join them on their side of the table as an ally, as a person who cares as much about the problem they're trying to solve as anything, not how do I get to the close.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think all salespeople should approach their customers as equals and as consultants. And I think that if you don't, if you are showing too much deference or coming from a level lower than them, if it feels like that, then it's really hard for them to take the things you say seriously. And I think it's really hard for them to respect you. And it's really hard to get them to open up to you in the way that you're talking about.
Yep.
What would you say are some key strategies that salespeople can use to invite their customers to open up to them? Are there specific tips that you have that salespeople can use that would make customers or their prospects make more comfortable sharing more about themselves and being more open?
Ask for stories. So don't ask for, so tell me what's bothering you. tell me about, you know, a year ago when this first began, tell me a story about when you first started Peer. Tell me a story of when it went great. Tell me a story of, you know, your drive home at night where you were, you know, consumed in anxiety over this. What was it like? But when they can tell you in narrative story, they'll give you lots of data in the story, but ask for the story. Don't ask for the analysis, because sometimes that will make people feel more vulnerable. Telling a story is much easier. The second one is practice. It is astounding to me, Steve. You know, I loved your reflection of be a peer and be equal. And you would think in 2020, in any sales curriculum, we would be seeing that content, and maybe many we are, but it's astounding to me how many salespeople don't do it. Now, in some cases, it's because they're 26, mm-hmm. right? And the buyer's 42. So we're not going to close that gap. So then you have 26-year-olds trying to pretend to be something they're not. And that's detrimental.
Well, like that can compromise your authenticity. I think you have to, you have to lean into your weaknesses to some degree, or else you come off as contrived and false.
And the problem is how many organizations are putting their salespeople in positions to have to do that, right? And so you may have systemic factors. This may not be a function of an individual's capacity or experience level. It may be a system, you know, I mean, we all know about, you know, compensation structures that incent all horrible behaviors from salespeople. We know that sales incentives, sales training, sales wiring in general, typically type A driven people who are ambitious and want to close. So you have all kinds of systemic factors surrounding the individual, and they lose themselves, right? So their own sense of values, their own sense of, you know, you have in your life a theology of relationship. But if you've never articulated it before and said, these are the relational theologies I will never violate. This is when I leave every prospective conversation, these are the five things that I absolutely have to have people conclude about me. If you've never articulated that stuff, even at 26, you're going to make it up as you go. And every prospective conversation, every transaction you go through will be like wallpaper in a house layering on the next level of answers to the point at which you're a chameleon, to the point at which you're so inauthentic, you're trying to accommodate anything in front of you, you won't know who you are. You'll have lost the sense of your own values and principles. And that's the point at which you're probably going to step into a catastrophe. You're going to say or do something really desperate or dumb. You know, pressures, quotas, mortgage payments, car payments, the wedding, you know, mm-hmm. are going to mount up. And suddenly you have no sales moral compass by which to navigate. And you're going to make some really unfortunate choices.
For sure. I mean, we've all been there, right?
Yep.
Well, conversely, how can what would you say the strategy is to get the customer to open up? Do you have any tips there?
Well, so ask for the story. Mm-hmm. Ask for the pain point. Ask for. So whenever I walk into, if I'm in an office, if I'm actually with, you know, somebody live, I'm going to go right for the picture of the family. Is that your daughter? How old is she? I'm a parent. I'm going to find common ground. And I know someone who went to that school. You play baseball. How long have you been playing? I'm going to find some aspect of their life that's of interest to them. That's not this work. And I'm going to be genuinely fascinated by that. I'm going to ask questions. I'm not going to say, you know, oh, I do that too. And try and talk about me, which many salespeople think is empathy. It's not, it's obnoxious. But I'm going to find, you know, so I was going to ask you, are you in San Francisco? Oh, you're from there? You know, I would have talked about that town. I have a partner there. I have clients there. You know, so I would find some point of connection outside of the work transaction and get them talking about themselves, because everybody's favorite topic to talk about is themselves.
Mm-hmm.
What do you love about your job? You know, why'd you choose this job? Why this company? What do you love about it? What frustrates you about it? There's lots of ways to get them talking about themselves. Learn about their story, because you are now a character in their story. You just need to know that you want to be the protagonist, not the antagonist. And the goal is for them to be the hero in their own story. Your job is to help make that happen in some form. Figure out your role in helping them be the hero in their own story. But first you have to learn the story. So get them talking about their life, draw them out with questions that you generally want to know about.
I like that. So be fascinated and be curious about your prospect and learn their story.
And fascination becomes a problem when it becomes idolatrous. You know,
when it becomes what?
Idolatrous, right? So when fascination
What does that mean?
When it becomes, oh my gosh, really?
Idolatrous?
Oh, that's so awesome. And it's just
Okay. Adulation, idolatrous. I've never heard that. That's good.
So you're making them an idol, right? You're working hard to establish a quality, then you're putting them on a pedestal.
Okay. So you have to stay
admiration unequal. Is good. Mm-hmm. Idolatry is not. But your fascination has to be genuine.
Idolatry. That's my word for the day. Idolatry. Yeah. okay. How can field salespeople offer delight to their customers or prospects without risking sounding fake or idolatrous?
Be complimentary. Learn from your clients, right? So they're going to tell you stories of their own wisdom. Take notes. Wow, I'm going to think about that. You know, let them teach you something.
That's a great, I've never heard that before. That's a great take. Let them teach you something.
Well, so here's the thing. They're going to teach you something. Will you be smart enough to learn it? Mm-hmm. And then thank them for it. Let them, enjoy them, laugh with them, like find things to laugh about. You know, if you find out they're cooking, whatever, and they love to, that's a hobby of them. What's your favorite meal to cook? What do you like to cook? You know, and if it actually sounds like a food you generally would like, ask for the recipe, you know,
yeah.
And then go home and actually make it and text them the picture of the meal.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love it.
Here's the thing I tell whenever I'm doing sales training with people or teaching people, act as if they're a guest in your home. You're hosting a cocktail party. You're hosting, be hospitable. Make them feel a guest in your home. Don't be a guest in their office or on their phone call. Whether you're on a phone or on a video call, whatever the connection is, close your eyes and think about it. If you were opening the door and inviting people over to a cocktail party or dinner party, how would your voice sound? What would your posture be? What would you do? Make them feel at home with you. And if you can think about hospitality being your primary posture, you'll be fine. I mean, it will get you off started right.
How can salespeople use these skills of relationship management and connections to differentiate themselves from their competitors?
Well, sadly, Steve, I think a lot of salespeople aren't doing this stuff to the degree they should be, right? I mean, first of all, you know, in a technologically digital enabled world, the sweep between sales and marketing is highly different now, right? They're not equal playing partners anymore, if we want to be honest. A lot of the heavy lifting is done by marketing now, digitally enabled marketing. So when you get into the conversation, there's already some work done already, right? Which means you have less time, you have less ramp up, whatever, and you have to do this better and quicker and more efficiently. The fact that we're more digitally enabled to move some of the funnel along from tofu to mofu, is for the enterprise, it's a great cost savings. For the person who's going from mofu to bofu, it's not, right? You just amped up the task. So practice, practice, practice. If you're not, you know, if people don't enter your presence and feel like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm with Rachel Ray, you know, oh my gosh, I just walked onto the Food Network, you know, HGTV show. This is, you know, they don't feel endeared to your presence within like 90 seconds. Then you need to find out why that is and fix it. Because, you know, the digital enabled world has truncated the time. So attachment now has to happen much quicker. And some of that's false, right? Because we don't form deep relationships in 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. But you have to assume that, I always teach my consultants, adopt the posture of intimacy before you've earned it.
Adopt posture of what?
Of intimacy.
Intimacy, you know? Okay.
Presume intimacy that you then earn your way into, because the time it would normally take to build the level of intimacy you need, we don't have it anymore.
And how does one presume intimacy? How do you do that?
How you establish peership, the stories you ask for, the deference you don't show, the way you offer feedback, the way you listen to them and get them talking, the way you appreciate the vulnerability they show you. When someone tells you a really hard story about, you know, that got them into the trouble they're asking you for help on, and you don't say, wow, that must have been really hard, thanks for sharing that with me, I appreciate that. You know, and honor the trust, you just blew an opportunity, right? But in my script, it says the next question is this. Mm-hmm. Well, right? So when someone's giving you the gift of vulnerability, maybe pause and thank them for it. It's those little moments that collect up the intimacy you need, that you, again, in a truncated process because of the digitally marketing work that did the top of the funnel for you, you in an older world, you might have had a couple of misses like that and still been able to move things along. But today, there's just not time or room for those kinds of misses because they're going to move on to the next person.
Mm. Right. Well, speaking of moving on to the next thing, so the next section of our show today is a quick question, quick answer, sales in 60 seconds.
Okay.
So what's the number one mistake salespeople make when building relationships with their prospects?
Well, they don't. They go right to the selling part and forget that attachment's happening. And so they treat everybody the same and equally and don't pay attention to the cues they're getting.
What skills and qualities make a great connector? What do you need?
A deep listening, empathy and self-awareness, and the courage to confront the truth.
What tips do you have for reps to become customer ready before each meeting?
Practice, role play. Never have the first conversation the first time. You know, if you're newer at sales, rehearse every conversation you have to have. Find a coach, but rehearse every conversation. If you walk in and cold call coldly, you deserve to fail.
What's one habit sales reps can start implementing right now to form better connections going forward?
Study your prospects. Google, LinkedIn, Facebook. You can learn information about them before you go in. Many people probably do bare minimum stuff, but find out who knows them. Find someone you have in common on your network and learn about them, and learn about their company. Know their context, right? Know the world in which you're not just their job or them, but know the world in which they operate and understand it so that you can demonstrate credibility in that your solution or your offering can benefit them.
Yeah, I always tell sales reps that I'm coaching, try to know your customers so well that you know how to do their job if you had to. So if you're selling, you know, an extreme example of this, if you're selling shoulder joints, a med device to shoulder surgeons, you should be able to stand next to them in surgery and basically know exactly what they should be doing next and yep. each step and why they're doing it and yep. know their job the way they should. Hard with shoulder surgery, easier if you're selling, auto parts to mechanics to understand cars really well, but you have to understand your customer that can mean knowing how to, it basically means knowing how to do their job.
Well, it also understands knowing what's hard about the job, right? So if a shoulder surgeon who's working for a pro medical specialty doctor function and is having to rent OR space in a hospital, and we know that OR scheduling is tough, and we know that sometimes parts don't show up right, and sometimes nurses put the wrong mark on the wrong arm, right? Know some of the complexities of a surgeon's life today, the kind of competition, how technology and first and second payers are, cutting into their income. There are stressors involved in being a surgeon today. Know those and you'll be equally as credible. Mm.
What's the best sales or business advice that you've ever received?
I think it was, many years ago when, a mentor and boss of mine said, consult first, sell later. Unburden yourself from the pursuit of a close. And we in my firm, we love what we do. We love the kind of profound impacts we get to have on organizations. I have to sell to do what I love to do. I got told early on in my life, oh, you could sell the Brooklyn Bridge, which I never thought was a compliment. It was always a little bit weird, but I can. So selling for me is a means to the end that I love. So for me, it's unburden yourself from the means to the end and just enjoy, let people see you love doing what you do by helping them. You know, let people know why you love shoulder joints and why you think joint replacement is cool, and tell the story of your grandfather who had a knee replacement and got a whole new life because of it, and what that meant for you and why you want to sell medical devices. And that, you know, because of your company's work, more people will have better shoulders.
As an actionable takeaway today, what should the field salespeople listening today do as a first step to get started on building influential connections?
Go back to 5 prospects. Two that bought from you, 3 that didn't. And ask them, describe in 10 words what it was like to be in my presence. What did you enjoy? What didn't you enjoy? And I want you to be honest with me.
Powerful.
Go do it. And then shut up and listen.
Another key skill that not everyone has, right? Okay, well, I'm going to attempt to summarize all the wisdom that you've given us here today, Ron. So salespeople who show up with a sense of help first, sell later are the most effective at selling, because selling is not just a transaction, but selling is a relationship. Salespeople must build trust in order to make deep connections. You want people to think about their own life differently, not you. So when you walk out of the room after a meeting, you want the prospect to be thinking about themselves and their business and what they're doing, not about you. So attachment is the way that we connect with others. Everyone has a slightly different style of attachment, and you need to realize what your style of attachment is, as well as the style of attachment of the person that you're trying to connect with, and then adapt to their style if you want to really attach with them. The value that you bring is in the eye of the beholder. Salespeople need to know the problems that their prospects are facing from their prospect's perspective. Get your prospects talking. Ask them, tell me how I can help. Listen for the help that they think that they want. Demonstrate that you're listening and that you understand the pains that you're facing. Empathy. Then show that you've solved these pains before. Next, talk about the solutions that you can provide for them. The trust that you build with them will be conferred onto your product. So the trust that you build with them will be the trust that they have in your solution or product. Salespeople can open up to their prospects to make them more comfortable. If it's applicable, show that you've been through the same struggles that they're going through, and build yourself up as an ally in their current challenge. If your solution is not the right fit for their problem, don't be afraid to advise them in the direction of something else. It'll build the relationship and potentially come back for you. Invite prospects to open up by telling a story of a good day for them, and then maybe have them tell a story of a not so good day for them. But the act of them telling you stories and you listening and empathizing will build that deeper relationship. Find a point of connection outside of work to get people to open up. Be the protagonist, not the antagonist, in your prospect's story, and figure out how to solve their pains in a way that makes them the hero. Let prospects teach you something and be smart enough to listen and to learn it, and then thank them for it. Show them that you've learned it. Presume a level of intimacy before you even earn it, and that can speed things up. Ron, this is some fantastic advice. Where can our listeners read more about your work? Where can they reach out to you?
I want to know how you did that. I want to know. That was pretty impressive.
the summarizing. I'm listening. I mean, I'm using your skills, Ron. I'm listening. I'm empathizing, and I'm taking notes.
that was an impressive bunch of notes. Anyway, I love to stay in touch with your listeners. You can find me at Navalent, NAVALENT.com. We've got some great articles and videos there. We've got a free ebook on leading transformation. If you want to download our playbook on impact, Navalent.com/transformation. The article in Forbes on deep connections like these with the 6 points of attachment, you can put in your show notes as well. So lots of resources. Also find me on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Fantastic. And that's Ron Carucci, CARUCCI.
Yep.
Well, this has been a great episode of the Outside Sales Talk. I appreciate it, Ron. If any of our listeners can think of other sales reps that would benefit from learning the skills Ron's talked about today, share the love and forward this episode on to them. Please leave a rating for the podcast. If you find these helpful, it really helps spread the word in through the world of Apple iTunes and all the other iTunes platforms. Take care until next time, everybody.